Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Paranexus Universe. This is your host, Michael Jones. I hope everybody's had a great week. I'm really excited about tonight's show. I have a guest tonight, Ingrid Irwin. She's our new board member. She's heading up our EVP ITC Research Division. She's been a Paranexus Charter member for some time, and she has quite a background, actually. And Ingrid, are you there?
I certainly am.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, great. Could you tell me a little bit about your background?
Certainly could. Well, I started out in the area of subtle energies. Basically, I had the nudge to learn more about the what I couldn't see. So I started out working in the areas of pranic healing and pranic psychotherapy just to work with subtle energy. From there, I branched out into meridian psychotherapy, which was again, working with all the meridians and how to run energy and things like that. From that point, I think I went on to do my degree in metaphysical science, and that's when I really started to get a very strong interest in EVP or electronic voice phenomena. And then I was very lucky actually to stumble across Paranexus in late 2007 and did the course into 2008. Which was a great course, enjoyed that, and then went on also now just finishing off my master's degree actually in parapsychology and consciousness studies with a main focus on experimental research and development in electronic voice phenomena. So that's sort of the area that I majored into.
Oh, wow. That's great. I also understand you were with the AAEVP also on the board of
yes.
Advisory
yes,
board?
Yes, serve on... Yeah, serve on the advisory board for AAVP with Tom Butler, Tom and Lisa Butler. So, yeah, we just look at the direction of AAVP, we look at articles and formatting and really look at the long-term effect of all sorts of different areas of EVP, and they deal with ITC also, so they do visual plus audio. So it's an interesting journey, and it's also to keep EVP's history continuing on, to keep it flowing and to keep the research. That's the main criteria of being on the advisory board.
Okay, great. For our audience members out there that don't know what EVP or ITC stands for, could you explain that for them?
Yeah, sure. We're looking at EVP, we're looking at electronic voice phenomena. Now, it's basically EVP is your traditional sense of getting a voice on a recording medium. If we go back a little bit in time, we'll go back to cassette, analog, and reel-to-reel. Now we're in the digital age, so basically we do most of our recording onto digital. When we go into ITC, we're looking still at audio, but we're still looking at camera and photography. So a lot of people are very interested in capturing what they think are spirit faces, you might say, onto computer screens and photographic medium. Myself, I tend to specialize in the audio section of it.
Oh, okay. Great. I think that one thing that me and you had talked about earlier that we found fascinating is the how, when you're doing investigations, how intent and belief systems actually will corrupt your data, in a sense. You know, I know with the abduction field and doing this kind of research for myself, I tend to come across a lot of individuals through their belief system that are relaying information back that's really tainted because they're not good observers. And same thing with the UFO field. You know, you get people that think they're seeing something when they're misidentifying it. And I don't know, do you come across this a lot in EVP research?
Well, we do. It's no different, I think, in any paranormal sector, that belief is a huge, our expectation really does form our beliefs. So in EVP, we do have that problem, and it's a problem all round, where our expectation and what we perceive, we start to believe in. The problem with the audio side is that people can start to hear things that aren't there. And it's very, very much when you get into areas of white noise and waterfall and water, even if you turn a radio on, and this is an interesting exercise to do, if you turn a radio on static and leave it on for 10 or 15 minutes, you will start to hear voices. Now, they're not good spirit voices. They're just our brain trying to make a connection with all the static and the random noises and trying to form some sort of form into the chaos. So belief, unfortunately, has a huge bearing on what we do.
Okay, so that produces like a pareidolia effect.
Mm. Yeah, an auditory sort of effect to it, yes.
Yeah,
because if we believe so much, you know, sometimes I think we believe so much, we want it so bad that, you know, our brain can start to say, look, you know, there's that face in the cloud. It's the same sort of thing.
Right. And, you know, with the abduction research I've done, there's a lot of fear involved. And the psychology behind that is your brain tends to try to find something to mask or have a happier appearance than it should be, and it's so you can deal with the situation. And to me, in a lot of ways, that's almost pareidolic in itself, because your brain's constantly trying to strive for something it can latch on to so it can understand what's happening. Same thing goes with a lot of these people that have no idea about what an alien would be. The older groups of people I've talked to, there was one elderly lady that didn't have any idea what an alien would be, or a gray for that matter, but she swore up and down she had an angel in her garden. But when she described the angel, she was describing a gray. But because of her belief system, she superimposed that on what she was seeing. And that's why I find this kind of fascinating. You know, I mean, does that actually affect the EVPs in themselves when people have just that kind of expectation?
Well, it would be in traditional recording where you've got a recorder on in, say, an ambient quiet room. It would be, and with no software filtering, that's probably another issue, then it would be hard, I think, for a belief to be able to transmit onto that recorder. If you're looking at something like radioscope or technology-based audio communication, then it's a whole different ballgame because you've got lots of static and huge amounts of rumbling and just snippets of voice going everywhere. So it's so easy to listen to that and start to think you can hear a voice saying, it's me, or hi, Rob, or hi, Jack, or whatever. You know, it's very easy for us to start to get clouded because our belief sort of clouds our interpretation of what we're hearing. It probably, I would say, with traditional EVP, it is more so when people start to put the audio onto software and start to manipulate, alter, enhance, and then we start to create voices within the noise.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do you ever come across any situations where people have actually doctored the EVPs?
Ooh, there's many situations where I think, and I'm not saying it is intentional. I think, again, I would come back to having a lack of knowledge in the area of acoustics. And you know, the technology industry, it's fantastic. It's made our lives great. But for EVP, It means that if you don't understand the software and you place a recording onto that, it's very easy to play with the filters and enhance and add effects and create all sorts of things. So there is many, I think we would term them as created or artificial EVPs. Not always intentional. I think it's a lack of understanding and knowledge in the area and how to use that software.
Okay, so more or less it goes back to misidentification again.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that happens a lot in my realm too. Do you have any good examples you could talk about right offhand of just some really neat EVPs you've come across?
Real ones?
Yes, absolutely.
Real one. Yeah, definitely. In the real category, yes. They are few and far between. I would say out of recording, I would record daily just for half an hour as I'm working or doing my own thing. I would say in a yield of, say, 30 trials, we would probably say we would maybe get 3 to 4 real anomaly voices. What's really fascinating about them is the real ones tend to be observational. So we may get 2 or 3 voices. They're very short. They might only be 2 or 3 seconds, and you'll get 2 or 3 voices and then a finish, for some reason, a word finish or a shh at the end. So almost like we're being observed, but they don't want to disturb us. They're the most interesting that I've found thus far, and can be a combination of 2 female, 1 male, 2 male, 1 male, there's never the same voice characteristic in the 3 or 4 voices.
So it's always like it's a different team of observers on the other side, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah. And maybe there's a lot in a team. They only send 3 or 4, but there seems to be this observational type of thing. And the other thing that's quite interesting with it is we never see one voice go for more than, say, about a 2 to 3 second time. So a sentence, if you really analyse a sentence, is often made up of 3 different voices saying a 2 second time gap. And what we term in EVP as a linkage, it seems to be they only have a very short window of opportunity. Thus, different voices speak different words very quickly.
Hmm. Do you have any theories of why there's such a small window?
We theorise ourselves silly. We have no answer to why. We're thinking maybe the window of opportunity that they get to speak in, which we really don't know what that window opportunity between our reality and theirs, let's say hypothetically, is. So we're sort of surmising that for them to make a full sentence, there has to be this small gap in that it's transmitted almost. But the actual theory to why is still the mystery.
So it's almost like it's an accidental situation to begin with.
Yes. And often you'll hear EVPs various places where you'll get long, lengthy sentences. That we have found that not to be the case with a real anomaly's voice. You'll never get, "Hi, I'm Jack. How are you? What are you doing?" There's way too much information in there. Most of them that are like that we find aren't real EVPs on analysis.
What is it usually? I mean, are you picking up background radio transmission, or is it?
Could be. Yeah, it could be. It depends on the area. Yeah, a lot of people could be picking up. The worst scenario is mobile phones. That's become quite popular in EVP because they're handy and they're with them, and that is open to a huge array of false positives that can happen, as you can imagine, on a mobile phone. And the same as the radio because it's transmitting and broadcasting. So it's open to a lot of areas of false positives in that side of it.
Looks like we got a question in the chat. Let's see, Hunter Gather wants to know, what does Ingrid think about a Frank's box?
Frank's box, yes. I haven't personally worked with a Frank's box. I have worked with some hacked Radio Shacks, the 12469 and the Sanjin. The Franks, as I haven't worked with it, I couldn't give a personal opinion, obviously, not having done that. But I have done quite a few radio suites and found some meaningful messages. In an average on trials we did, we found in a trial of 20, we found probably 2 meaningful messages that actually could be analysed and pretty much were anomaly voices. We could not put them down to static or radio communication or any sort of way a human vocal cords could have produced that sound. So, yeah, I would be more interested actually into getting into Frank's box and doing some work with that.
Oh, great. Speaking of that, I was going to ask you another question about how do you determine, as far as a person's vocalization, what is the difference between an EVP and a person speaking?
Okay, there's quite a few different characteristics. You'll notice with an anomaly voice, little characteristics that stand out straight away is there is no breath. Even if you listen to my talking, I will constantly have stops between my words. You'll hear those little taps and what we call twills, which is the tongue hitting your teeth or the hard palate of your mouth. There's lots of little characteristics of the human vocal cords that are just not present in any anomaly voice. So there's no breath, no saliva sounds. I know it sounds a bit yucky, but there is absolutely nothing. It's steady, consistent flow of speech, even though it's short, with no articulatory characteristics. And no breath. That's really interesting. As you hear people talk, you can always note breath. And those stops, whenever a word stops and a word starts, in an anomaly voice, you find that the words literally link to each other. Absolutely no stop at all, right through whatever the few words that they say.
Wow. Is it usually monotone, or does it fluctuate? Or
no, you're actually right there. There's some of the most observant ones we've noted that have struck us as the most unusual are monotone. They're very monotone, and there's none of those, and this is where our interpretation becomes hard, because we've got all this monotone sound. We've got no peaks and troughs of what we normally need for our brain to make out words. Thus, without those peaks and troughs or the formats, we can't hear the words correctly. And that's why a lot of the time we come up with so many interpretations from so many different ears of the same capture. It's a bit frustrating. It seems to be nature of the beast at this stage.
Yeah, that almost would link back to the expectation of what they're trying to hear.
That's right, yes. And it's very important with EVP research that you don't share preempted ideas of what you hear, because then I've already read it, and then straight away when I listen to that recording, I've already got a clouded idea or perception of what you hear, and then generally I'll hear it.
Okay, so it's more or less like you've contaminated your thoughts already.
Yes. And you've clouded the other listeners. So it's more interesting to share EVP examples with no preempted interpretation and label them, you know, female voice original capture or something. So it's very generic, and everyone goes, what could be on that? And that way it gives people the chance to actually try and work out the interpretation for themselves without having their perception clouded. That's important.
Okay, yeah, that's one of the main concepts that we try to teach people at our academy is not to give everybody information before the investigation outside of the few individuals that should know. You know, the most important part of it is that when you send teams in, you don't want their thoughts already, you know, being contaminated with information that you already have. That way they can report back to you and verify what's been reported by the client. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing with your psychics. You do not tell the psychics anything about the place, so they can actually get a good reading, bring it back to you. You can get verification this way. And it's just amazing how the human mind works and wants to overlay information that you've already, you know, gained. And it's just, and the same thing with the alien abductee type situation. A lot of people have preconceived notions as what to expect. So, you know, and one thing I've talked to Doug and a few other members of Paranexus, you know, about was the fact that through the media and through everything else, everybody expects to see a gray, a little short 4 foot tall guy with the big black eyes, a big head. Well, it turns out that that's reported just way too much, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's just from the media contaminating everybody. And so when something actually does happen, they can't observe really what's going on. You know, for all they know, they may actually be having a haunting. And because they're so scared, they're seeing an alien, or vice versa. You know, you can never tell until you get into the research deep enough whether the person's actually grounded enough to make that kind of assessment.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And we see that with in EVP, I see that very much so in more the technology-based radio sweep area, where a lot tend to feel that whatever's coming through are evil entities, and they get a lot of messages that are very abusive. Now, in traditional EVP, what I've done for years, never have encountered anything even vaguely intrusive or nasty or abusive in any way. So it seems, it's very similar to what you're saying. It seems like there seems to be this clouding idea of their perspective, and then what they start to get on their EVPs is abuse. It's very nasty, crass messages. But these people believe that's what the spirits will say. So you have to wonder how much our perception, you know, is influencing what we're actually experiencing in this reality.
So in other words, it's more of a... your ideas or your expectations will manifest, is what you're saying, as far as the technology is concerned. You know, I've experienced that before on investigations with people. When they expect things to happen, it seems to. And it's just really amazing to me how the dynamics of that, because that really suggests a lot of it, you know, a lot of things going on with the human condition and how the mind projects whatever energy it is, and it manifests. And it's just amazing to me.
It is.
And didn't you say, we were talking earlier, you were talking about EVPs happening within so many feet of a human being.
And
I find that fascinating also. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. We did some experiments. We were really interested at the time in looking at what sort of effect we are having in this whole EVP type of communicating. So what we decided to do is to run some trials. And when we run a trial, we don't run two or three recordings and go, okay, that's data. We'll run 50 or 100, and there might be two or three of us that will do that. So we try to get a big group of information to sit down and look at before we can actually make some sort of idea of the theory. So what we did is we took the recorders and we took them out of vicinity from ourselves. So for instance, for myself, I decided to put the recorder in my house but would work in the studio. Interestingly, we all did different types of experiments, and interestingly, when we're not in the room with the recorder, we do not get a voice. So when we sort of worked a little bit closer, okay, well, what if we put the recorder, you know, X amount of feet away and so forth. So we've finally been working out what point does the recorder out of our energy, in a sense, or our energy field, not pick up an anomaly voice. We found around that 10 to 15 feet margin, once that recorder's out of that range, you can record day in, day out, and there'll be nothing on it. So it's an interesting idea to think, are we part of the circuitry that's happening? And obviously we are. We are as much as important as a recorder in the whole circuitry of how this is being communicated. So we sort of ran a lot of those, and we're still running. We're still running many of them. We're still looking at different parameters that we can take the recorder to. But this stage, it seems to be once that recorder's past that 10 feet range, that's it. Nothing happens.
Has anybody...
You're listening to nothing.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. That's almost like you're an indirect conduit, in a sense. You know, this is what I find fascinating. People always talk about Ouija boards, tarot, and all this other stuff. And it makes me wonder now, from that, you know, statement you just made, that are all these different, what would be the good word for it, these, you know, like the cliche on a Ouija board. It's not the Ouija board or the cliche. It's literally the person is focusing intent through the Ouija board, and so the Ouija board responds. And the thing they don't understand is it's them causing the effect. And I'm kind of wondering if all these other situations, all the way into the abduction arena, is it the same exact way? Whereas, you know, it's kind of like you get what you look for kind of situation. So
you're pretty right there, yes.
And it's you know, like I said, I've been on an investigation not too long ago, and we were getting some interesting things going on. And the fascinating thing I found out from the investigation is when people, right before we started, everybody had certain expectations, I guess, and the same individuals also experienced things. Okay, I went into it not expecting anything at all, and I didn't have anything happen to me all night, but I did have one subjective thing happen, and I had my shirt tugged a couple of times, which to me, I didn't expect it, I didn't even think about it, but it happened. And it was just really fascinating to me that that happened. You know, to me, that was a genuine situation, whereas the others I was watching, I don't know that they didn't, you know, self-manifest something, you know.
It was sort of a group mentality, like a group of people coming together with the same sort of energy and excitement, et cetera, can form like a group energy.
Yeah, exactly. And anything that was there is actually gone, but that ambient energy reacts and manifests, you know, whatever they're looking for. So it's kind of the same thing you were talking about, the angry EVP response. You know, it's not that they're actually talking to anybody. It's almost like their subconscious is projecting back onto the tape and what they expect. And I kind of find that pretty cool. That's pretty amazing, quite honestly, the difference.
It is, and it shows that, you know, a lot of people, the majority that you do see displayed worldwide on a lot of forums are like that. And it just shows that this field still has quite a fear-based mentality, or a mentality that's lack. I personally myself have never experienced through radio sweep and traditional recording, and I've tried recording with reel-to-reels and tape decks and all that sorts of things. Never have I got a threatening or harmful message. If anything, actually quite the opposite. Some of them are actually quite caring. Like, actually, I have one which was quite interesting where we're moving a filing cabinet, and I forgot the recorder was on. And it was just in a studio here, and just struggling away with it. And then you hear a female voice in the background go, "Oh, careful." So it was almost like, be careful, you might hurt yourself. So I think sometimes there's some nice ones out there too.
Have you guys theorized that it might be your higher self projecting back onto the EVP itself, or or other spirits?
We don't know. We don't know whether we're saying that there's a threefold here, whether it's myself, the recorder, and the spirit, if you want to call that, that's making the voice, or is it some sort of projection of my subconscious or higher self onto the recording medium? That, you know, it's a really tough one to answer, and that's why we started to try, well, what if we take ourselves out of the equation? Would we still get a voice? I've even tried sleep ones where with the DS40, if you've got that one, that's quite a good little recorder because it has a timer. So you can pop it on your bedside table and set it to come on for 2 or 3 hours when you know you'll be at your deepest sleep. Done quite a few of those and still continuing on, but yet to get anything. So even in an unconscious state, we still get nothing.
So you almost You almost need conscious intent.
That's what finds it very fascinating, yes.
Quite interesting. Yeah.
Well, it is, and it's almost like, do they talk? Because, I mean, even we've also noticed if we, you know, play the recorder and we're very, we're very direction towards the recorder's on and we really want a voice and we ask lots of questions. It seems like the more we want, in sometimes an EVP, the less we get. So there tends to be some sort of observational thing going on. What it is, we're still trying to work it out. And whether it is something separate from ourselves or something apart of ourselves still needs a lot more further research.
Oh, okay. I've got a question. Have you ever gone to a haunted site and actually got background recordings of, for a better word of it, an out-of-time kind of thing? Kind of like, you know, if you were to go to a school that had been shut down in a playground, and there's nobody there, but when you do your EVP recording, you hear children playing.
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I've done a few at a historical cemetery in our own town, and did get out of and was really not focused on recording at the time. I was just walking around and playing with the dogs and things like that, so I wasn't really overly focused on the recording, and we've actually, surprisingly, out of 2 sessions down there, got 7 different voices. So that's sort of very interesting. And the other point that's interesting in the area we're in is that we tend to get a lot of children's voices, which is actually not quite normal with EVP. We don't find, we tend to get sort of adult formed voices. Mm-hmm. In this town, in its history, this town in the late 1800s was what the influenza came through and wiped out nearly the whole child population. So in a 3-month period, the whole shire lost every child. So that seems to be sort of a little precursor when you're starting to get children's voices constantly on the recorder. When you start to think, I wonder if the history, something is dramatic, because that would have been a very dramatic time. You can imagine the energy within the town, that sort of energy would linger for decades. So I sort of have to wonder whether sometimes I'm recording children's voices in the studio where I'm sitting right now, maybe there's some sort of link there.
Right.
Oh, it is fascinating.
Yeah, it is. We got another question in the chat room. Oh. Have you ever gotten any meaningful answers to questions?
Yes and no. To a direct question, no. To myself, actually talking to myself or just making a generalized comment as I was working with a recorder on, yes, I have. So if I ask a direct question like, is someone here, or can you give me a name, or anything like that, where do you live, what's it like where you are, nothing. And we've done hundreds of those. But what's interesting, the ones where I forget about the recorder and the other day made a comment, I don't think I'll have time to read my book. And just was, you know, when you talk to yourself, and then about 2 seconds later, there's a male voice, a very low monotone voice saying, don't give up. Well, okay.
Wow, that's interesting.
There was one that's very interesting too. I said, I'm sitting here reading about clairaudience. And I thought to myself, geez, I said it out loud. I wonder what it must be like with clairaudience. And then about 5 seconds, there's a female voice says, we come.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
So it's not like a very direct answer. It's just like a side comment, really, I think you'd say.
I wonder if the reason they only have 2-second window or so, it would be because it takes that much energy to manifest in that situation, you know, like that.
I think you're right. I think there's some sort of energy exchange that is pretty big. Like maybe, you know, if we're part of the equation, is our energy, is our intent, et cetera, high enough for them to be able to utilize it? There's so many different things that must come into this equation. I don't think it's as simple as, you know, they dart into my studio and have a chat and dart out. I think there's got to be a lot of things within that moment that come together for that energy exchange to take place.
Well, I have a question. Have you ever noticed any differences? I mean, does it matter at what location you're actually trying to conduct EVP research?
I've conducted various places because I've been lucky enough that we do move around a fair bit. We do travel. So when we're traveling around Australia, we take recorders and everything. I find if I'm transient in one spot, like I am at the moment in the studio, which I've been here for now 12 months, I'll get better quality recordings. I was just at another person's place the other month and we stayed there for 2 weeks. Now, I recorded every day in that house because it wasn't my own residence. It took 12 days before I got an EVP. So I think there may be a bit of a location. There tends to be a bit of a time lapse, even when we change recorders. For instance, if I decide to change off the Sony at one stage and upgraded to the DS40, there seemed to be a time lapse where there was nothing. And a few of my colleagues have noticed the same. Tends to be about a 2 to 3 week time gap, and then we start to get voices. So is there some sort of sensitizing going on? We have to be in one spot for a time. It's hard to say. That is with traditional EVP. So, you know, radio sleep and everything's a little bit different ballgame.
Wow. So it's almost like they're having to adjust to the equipment that you're using as they have to keep trying till they figure out how to use it.
Yeah, and maybe there's a vibratory, you know, a frequency type situation, a vibration type situation. You even notice with EVP, people that are new into it, you've got that newness effect, you've got that anxiety, you know, you're all excited and can't wait to get your first voice. Wow, they get some amazing captures. And within, once we start to get used to it and we become a bit complacent, they seem to die off. And I probably would say that has a lot to do with investigations too, because everyone's – quite excited and their energy's high and, you know, everyone's egging each other on and we're looking for something, and maybe that is another precursor why these sorts of investigations in haunted places do get voice captures.
That's interesting. The next question I was going to ask you, if you were to say what is the best equipment to actually use on EVP investigations, what would you actually tell the audience as far as if they were going to go out and buy equipment today and work with it?
Sure. My best advice would be, if you're going to look at traditional recording and you're going to look at getting real anomaly voices, I would leave aside the inferior recorders. There's too many problems with those that have surfaced. I would look from something like the Olympus, DS 30, 40. You could go to 50, but the 50 is fantastic. It's got so many features you wouldn't really need for EVP, and it's a bit pricey. But if something around the DS 30 and 40 are great, a new one that we're trialing out at the moment, which we've found really good too, is the Zoom H2, because that actually has four internal microphones and a 360 radius. And the reason I'd recommend that one would be if EVP is directional, the Zoom, because you can do 360 recording, may pick up voices that, say, a standard IC recorder that only has a one-direction microphone may not ever pick up. A little bit of a trial going on there, but I think if you can look at your higher-end CD quality, if you're looking at software, then because all you really need is your recorder and your software, if you're looking at software, probably the best I would say for anyone that's really price affordable would be GoldWave. You've got a great little package with GoldWave. You've got great spectrogram. Very easy if you don't know anything about waveform or spectrogram analysis. GoldWave gives you some really great simple effects to be able to learn how to use that. So for people starting out, definitely a good quality DS30 or DS40. You'd never need another recorder. And something like your software, something like GoldWave would be ideal.
Okay. What kind of learning curve would you say there is to this as far as learning EVP and how to actually be able to identify EVPs and such?
The learning curve's a big one. I think we're still always on that learning curve. I know I am. With EVP, the greatest thing, something like Paranexus, where you can join up and be on a forum with people that will give you honest opinion, where you can get your recordings, you know, you might get a little voice in there and think, wow, is it or isn't it? And we all doubt ourselves. I mean, that's part of human nature. So the idea that you can put it onto a forum and get other people to listen and get good feedback and good constructive feedback is really important. But the learning curve, it's learning to differentiate between what's a human voice and what's an anomaly voice. And that's something that I'll be starting to put a lot more information on Paranexus so members can start to read up a little bit more on frequency and articulation. And I'll keep it very simple and very layman so you don't have to go in and become an acoustic expert. You can just take this information and apply it straight away to your work. And it'd be good to see that happen more so in investigations. So they eliminate those false positives.
Okay. Well, do you have any kind of wishes as far as what kind of research experiments you would like to conduct later on? I mean, I know you've been with Paranexus for over a year now, and I know we have, you know, quite a few members. If you were to suggest something that would be really helpful in EVP research, what would that be?
For myself or that other people could probably aim for contributing, would you say, Michael?
Well, contributing to start with, but actually for yourself also. I mean, you know, you're leading the way as far as we're concerned, and, you know, that's something we're – to me, this is the most meaningful part of investigations. You know, this is direct response, you know, to entities or whatever, and I think it's that important. It's meaningful. You know, I've talked to Doug. You can get photographs all day long, but to have an EVP is like gold. And that's what I'm saying here is once everybody gets up to speed on EVP research and starts understanding how to do this properly, what would be your inclination as to some of the experiments you would like to run?
Sure. I would love to run, I would continue on with our research now. We would love to get more into looking at analog and reel to reel. Basically, we want to look at whether the valve mechanism in those had anything to do with it, because there were some very fascinating EVPs done in that era. And just to be able to verse that off against digital, it would be also really interesting to look at people that do investigations in a very grounded, rational way, and they do get EVPs, whether we can look at, does someone individually who goes and does an investigation get an EVP versus five people? So we can start to look at the human element, and that's probably the most fascinating part, and where I'd like our research, or my research, to start to go into is how can we look at that human, what are we doing as a part of this research, and how are we understanding this research better and better? Because as you said, you're right, you get a meaningful message in a room where you sit in a room and they're for nothing. There's no noise, not a bang, not a sound, and then on playback you get something meaningful. It's huge. It really makes us look at ourselves in a far greater way. So there's lots of things I'd love to do. And as the other person also said, things like Frank's Box and everything, there are other areas that we would really like to research and see whether that is giving us valid anomaly voices, real anomaly voices, or are we just misinterpreting what we're getting? So lots to do.
I mean, is there any personal ideas you had? Yeah. For instance, I mean, like you were talking about having to run 100 tests to be able to actually even get enough of a data field to make any kind of conclusion.
That's
to
right.
What's going on. I mean, would that be we need 100 members, or we'd need a lot of members to start participating?
If one person can get out. The thing with a trial is what we're trained, as myself is trained to do, is we can't just go out and get 4 or 5 recordings and then say, okay, here's a theory. Because that's not basing, then we're not looking at proof-related data. We need to get, and the more people that get in and do this, the better we'll get at the research, because we need hundreds, literally hundreds of trial studies to be able to form conclusive data. Then we can actually then say, okay, we've got a pattern here, we've got repeatability here, and now how can we take that to the next level? And I think that's important with EVP, because that's the only way we're going to ask testable questions. We can ask lots of questions, as we all do with EVP, but we've got to start to formulate testable questions that lead us the next step, that leap us further to understanding this phenomena. So, the more people that do real recording of EVP and can post them with Paranexus and get on board, the better we're going to be and the further we're going to get.
I think that would be wonderful. Yeah, that's if anybody out there is listening and would love to get into EVP research, you need to join Paranexus. We have the facility as far as background of people, and we have people here that will absolutely give you an honest answer to what's going on. We don't sit there and impose belief systems or anything like that. So the other thing I was going to mention to you that I do find even a little bit more fascinating is now this is with alien abductee type stuff. One thing I've experienced in all the times that I've ever dealt with anything is you have this weird situation where you get PK effects. Things will move. You get strange, odd, just anomalous things happening outside of just the being abducted. Have you ever experienced that when you went out and did EVP work?
I didn't catch that quite.
Oh, just anything anomalous. I mean, outside of just the EVP alone, did you have any kind of PK events, psychokinetic events?
Not myself. I have heard people talking about, radios turning on and off and house lights turning on, all sorts of little things. Myself, no, I haven't really experienced anything in coercion with EVP that I would say would be a PK response.
Okay. Well, here's the next question for you. Would these people that were experiencing this, were they the kind of investigators that were expecting this kind of response?
Well, no. See, that's probably the funny part. And they were people that had experienced, actually one gentleman had experienced an EVP he had gotten on a camcorder just off holiday, and he played that and realized there was a voice in the background. It was almost a voice and then some sobbing, and he had no idea what it was, and he started to find weird and wonderful things happening, like lights turning on and off, and etc. So there's a few people that I have talked to that have experienced tended to be people that really weren't into research, weren't into paranormal or anything, and had somehow, maybe it, the fear factor again has kicked in, because he was quite concerned, you know, he was quite worried about why he had this voice on the recorder. So not always. And I find, like, a lot of us that are just doing this, the tedious grounding sort of research, we don't have many very exciting experiences like that.
No, you don't. That's
no.
You know, that's the other thing I wanted to mention. You know, like this last investigation, I really didn't experience all that much. The times that I did have odd things happening, I absolutely did not expect it, but I was in fear mode.
Yes, I have to wonder whether that initial fear mode and everything has some sort of influence on that, on the things that were happening to them, for sure.
Yeah. And so I'm not, kind of wondering if just anxiety alone, that buildup of the energy releases in an odd way. The other thing I was going to mention to you was the when you're working on the advisory board with the AAEVP, how long have you been with them?
AAVP for probably 2000, off the top of my head, 2007, about the time when I was doing the metaphysical side of it, that I actually, I mean, I'd known about them, and I'd seen White Noise, everyone would know that movie, I think that was 2005, but to actually join and start to participate was about 2007, but more so the White Noise, the movie, that really, you know, pumped up AAVP, but it also had a diverse sort of effect where many people became very frightened and fear-based of EVP because of the content of the movie. So, again, we're going right back to what we're talking about, Michael, is that fear perception. And a lot of people after that movie went into EVP recording scared to death of what they were going to find.
Oh, absolutely. It's that fear and confusion factor, you know. You know, they just recently came out with a Paranormal Activity movie, I believe, and I'm just predicting that we're fixing to see a large influx of that very situation starting.
Yes.
And I'm kind of not wanting to deal with that, but in a way, you know, it's going to have positive effects too. You know, more people are going to want to know about it and understand what's going on around them. You know, the real, you know, people that are really experiencing things, and you know, that's what Paranexus is about. And you know, I was really, really happy the moment they told us you were coming on board. I was so excited. I was just like, oh my God, we finally, you know, got an EVP expert now. This is wonderful, you know. So that's just added to the team, you know. I know Doug's excited. Yeah. Everybody else was excited.
Well, it's great to be aboard a team that are just such well-grounded, rational thinkers and that see the greater good. And, you know, my work and my colleagues' work and with Paranexus, you know, it is all about the greater good of the phenomena itself. It's not about going and scaring the bejeevers out of each other. It's about getting the research there, getting understanding. And if we just go along the assumptions and which, you know, unfortunately is a very big part of this field, we never advance. We seem to be that dog on the porch chasing its tail. We never go any further and we tell the same stories over and over. So to be a part of Paranexus is a great leap forward because we can really showcase our research and in the same token, we can get this work out there in a good format that all people can take and apply in a constructive manner and not just have to wonder, was that a voice or was that not? You know, that happens so much, you know. So we really, it's going to be a great, great journey, I think. And I think Paranexus is probably the leading edge at the moment in forming this sort of research.
Great. That's exactly how I feel about it. And that's more the reason anybody out there should join that are interested in doing paranormal research. You know, we are very serious-minded people. We're trying to find answers to the human condition. And then that's what's important. That's how you evolve. And I really do believe that, you know, within the next year, we're going to start seeing some really cool developments come out of all this. What I would love to see, personally, is for us to actually get into EVP research to the level of where we actually do start running trials, but, you know, and have multiple people doing it so we start getting a good data set.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd love to, you know, once if there's people interested that are members with Paranexus, we can certainly set up different trials, because there's so many trials that we could run that could give us so much information. And because to do this properly, you have to run such a large amount, it just makes it so much easier if you've got lots of people that, you know, want to partake in it. So it would be great that, and that way too, members are learning as they go. They're a part of a trial, and some of this data, if we can get the data up there and get it really formulated, we can start some really good academic articles and get some stuff out there. And
right.
It's all about education. You know, learning is for all of us, even for me. You know, I'm been doing it for a lot of years, but, hey, I'm still right on that learning curve.
Right.
So, and I love to be the learning, because the learning is what really broadens and expands our perception and our awareness. So we become leading edge thinkers. That's my best word for it. And that's probably the greatest thing with Paranexus, and why I joined with Paranexus, is that it would be the leading thinkers in the field.
Absolutely.
We don't go running around scaring ourselves.
That's right. And all the interaction between all the researchers allows everybody to evolve and have a greater understanding of what's going on. You know, it's a win-win situation. It's not like you're performing the research and everybody's dumping data to you. It's the data's there. We work with it, and everybody gets to know what's going on and finds out,
you know,
the conclusions from it. So it's really a wonderful thing, I think, personally. I was going to ask, I was trying to remember what I – God, I went blank. This is horrible.
That's horrible, isn't it?
Yes. How many times do you go out – I mean, do you actually record on a daily basis or
– Yes. Most of the time, yes. I would record on a daily basis. I would do a half an hour. As I work in the morning, I will leave the recorder on and just do a half an hour just general and try not to pay attention to the recorder, just do what I want to do. And then from that point, I'll often set up different trials depending on what my colleagues and I are sort of talking about, and we might then do a different trial. We'll even try different things like recording in the morning versus recording in the afternoon. Does someone's energy higher in the morning, get more voices than, let's say, hypothetically, when someone's tired? It would be great to get people that don't record EVP and get them to record. Would they get voices? Because they have no belief in it. We've got so many ideas. and something like a platform as Paranexus with the members, we can branch out and start experimenting and all learn from it. But generally I just say to most people, just turn your recorder on for 30 minutes each day and just be patient. It's a patience game. There's not, phenomena like this doesn't happen every day. They're not there for our entertainment. So it's spasmodic and you have to be patient. That's the best advice I can give.
Do you have any do's or don'ts to do with your recorder?
Do's and don'ts. As I'm recording, definitely if you talk, say you've talked, if you do talk while you're recording, talk loud. Don't whisper. We can pick up, even if someone whispers by accident, we can pick that up on analysis. But for the everyday person, they may mistake a whisper for, you know, an anomalous voice. So if you do recording and there's a bang or someone slides a chair, just say, a chair just slid. I just spoke. Oh, that was me whispering. That way you'll always know that what you're recording and what you pick up is real anomaly voice if you do pick one up. Bar that, you know, there's not much else you can really do. A quiet environment is probably the best, because it's very easy to mistake noise for a voice. And my second biggest thing would be to stay away from audio manipulation and enhancement. You do not need to, as quote unquote, enhance a voice or bring out a voice. These voices are there on playback, and it's only the digital age and the software age and the technology that's created this problem of artificial EVPs. If you go back to analog and reel-to-reel and take the time to listen to some of those, you'll realize for the founders that did that, they could speed it up, slow it down, but that's pretty much all you can do with reel-to-reel or reverse it. You've got nothing to play with. So try to not want to get onto those software programs and start to thrash out the audio, because you will find you'll get Persuader, you'll get Unreal EVPs, and, you know, that's not going to help anyone, not any of us in research.
Okay. Do you ever come across any EVPs that you do have to slow down or speed up to actually get the cadence correctly?
No.
Absolutely
not. Absolutely not. No, if I put it this way, the way we work it, if it has to be clear, concise, meaningful words. Anything below that, if you doubt it, trash it, get rid of it. And I know most people would go, oh, my God, I could lose an anomaly voice doing that. But if you cannot verify it is an anomaly voice, it's no good to us. What can we do with it? We can't use that for research, and we can't get testable questions. That's why real EVP recording doesn't happen often. As I said, if you think of 30 trials, like 30 different recording times, say that's a month, 30 days in a month, and you get 3 to 4 voices, that's not a lot, and that could be endless hours of listening. So it's tempting to want to keep something that sounds like a whisper. At the end of the day, you know, we really have to sort of keep the best and keep our research moving forward.
Okay. Well, outside of those tips, I mean, things like, you know, don't put the recorder in your pocket when you're walking around. But, I mean, if you're on an investigation, is it wise to hold it in your hand, or is it best to set it down?
I would set it down if you could, because I've even noticed that a recorder in a hand, that enough movement, you know, with the hand going over the recorder and just various movements, can be suspiciously changed into voice. If you could put the recorder down, that would be fantastic. If you are going to hold it, then definitely hold it at the base, not near the microphone. Hold it outward and hold it tight so that there is no jewelry or rings or anything that could hit the recorder to make an internal noise. On an investigation, I would suggest 2 recorders, so you've got a backup to check data against. And the only other thing that on an investigation that would be great with EVP, if people could do a recording of the room, not in the investigation, maybe prior, that gives you the acoustics qualities of that room, because all rooms and buildings will have a different sound. So if you could go in, pop the recorder down, get 5 or 10 minutes and just keep that aside. Another thing I would also do is everyone that's in the investigation, take a recording of them saying a sentence. So again, you've got that aside for analysis and comparison. And yeah, and you know, if you have to hold it, just try to be as careful as possible, because these IC recorders pick up everything.
Okay.
They're very good.
Hey, we've got another question from the chat room. Dave asks, what's with the microwave theory?
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. You're a legend. Yes, the microwave theory, that's an interesting one. That was one we stumbled across. We decided that we were talking about acoustics. We were actually talking about Faraday cages and things like that. And, of course, none of us here had a Faraday cage. And we're still talking about building one, but we haven't yet. And so we came to the next best conclusion, what could we use? Well, the microwave was the next best thing. So we tested the microwave, you know, putting the mobile phone inside the microwave, trying to ring it, it wouldn't ring, etc. So it wouldn't pick up straight signals. That was sort of our idea. We were just sort of looking at what environmental signals that could be picked up by the recorder. And so we popped in the microwave, and all of us found within the first few recordings in a microwave, we get clearer, more concise voices. So that shocked us. So now we have to look at the acoustic quality, really, of the microwave and look at why in such a little confined space the recording was higher. So that's how we ended up doing the good old microwave trials.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think you could pick up a voice in a microwave. That's quite interesting.
No. Well, we were doing the trial to not pick a voice up. That's the silly part. We had no expectation we would pick a voice up. We said, no, not going to happen. It won't happen. Acoustically, it can't. And we all of us picked up some very good captures with the microwave. So we're going to have to branch out on that. And, you know, if other members want to try that and post them in, that would be fantastic, because, again, it helps us look at the data.
And for everybody out there, I would, you know, you need to join Paranexus if you'd like to learn about EVP research, or for that matter, any other kind of anomalous research. We have plenty of professionals here, and we would love to have you as a member, and we're all here to grow and learn together. I need to make a few announcements real quick. You know, of course, we have Ingrid now on our board of directors, and she's heading the ITC EVP research. And we've also got the research assistant for members out there, which actually gives a large amount of data to record before you go on investigations. Makes it really nice. I'm constantly, of course, working and striving to better the website. I'm right now programming the blog, an update on the blog, so the users actually have better usage. So everybody have a good night, and appreciate you showing up for Paranexus Universe, and I will talk to you next month. Talk to you later.